Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Leeds Book Club podcast. It's been a very long time, but we are delighted to bring back one of the original three LBC members. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
Today, we are going to be looking forward to 2016 and anticipating our reads going ahead. At the beginning of the year, I got a tweet from Jess saying she'd found a reading challenge and she thought we should go for it. And as I've slightly organised my book clubs a little to be a bit more manageable this year, I thought, why not? And so you can find the original list on Modern Mrs. Darcy. It's 12 books, so roughly a book a month.
But we'll probably be reading books around those ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. It'll get done when it gets done, I'm more thinking, rather than...
I'm probably going to do a book a month. I've done my first book in January, so...
Yeah, and I'm one book down, yes. Forward, so... Yeah. So there are 12 categories, which I'll quickly read out, and then we can have a look at what books we're thinking about reading or which ones we've already read and so on. So the 12 categories are a book published this year, a book you can finish in a day, a book you've been meaning to read, a book recommended by a local librarian or bookseller, a book you should have read in school, a book chosen by your spouse, partner, sibling, child, or BFF, a book published before you were born, a book that was banned at some point, a book that was previously abandoned, a book you own but have never read, a book that intimidates you, and a book you've already read at least once.
I think that's a very well-rounded list.
It covers a bloody gauntlet.
Yeah. I found this through Twitter. One of the people I follow, Lisa Jeskins, who's a fellow librarian lovely woman, tweeted it saying she was going to do it. And I haven't had time off with reading in such that I've had time off from almost being Book Elf Leeds in a way. The last 2 years I've qualified as a librarian, I've been very busy, and I kind of want something to get me back into reading for pleasure again. And reading challenges, I think, are a great way of doing that. So I was really happy to find this one.
Well, it's always great, especially one like this, because it covers so much scope, but it just allows you even more freedom to choose stuff. I mean, we've both done author and reading series, you know, like a book series challenges in the past, and ultimately, like, you're existing within a world. Whereas this one, I think, because I feel the same way, I've read a lot for book club and I enjoy a lot of it, but it's been ages since I've just picked books for myself and gone, you know what, I really want to read that one, or I've intended reading that one for years and never gotten around to it. So I'm hoping this will be like a little nudge back into,
for me as well. I think it's going to make me think about the, not the quality, because I hate the idea of there being a quality in fiction, but it's going to make me think about a lot more about reading classic authors, reading more diversely in my reading, reading a lot of people who maybe books I've neglected because I've kind of considered them too taxing for my brain over the last couple of years. So try and get back into literary fiction as well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I find it very difficult to have a conversation with somebody about the quality of books without ultimately ending up feeling like a bit of a snob.
Yes.
I don't really see a difference between literary and popular fiction, because if I can read it and enjoy it, then it's a great book. I liked it. Good. Yay. You know, so I don't really qualify books in that way. But I've noticed that, for example, I'm a huge science fiction fan, but unless a science fiction book comes out of the book club choice, I'm not reading my preferred genre at all. As a child, I grew up reading the classics because I'm a library brat, you know. I couldn't necessarily afford to go out and buy all of the Enid Blytons or Roald Dahls, and when you're in the library, it's very natural to just continue working your way down through the relevant
age
groups.
Well, it's like Jeanette Winters said, she started at 8, it happened to be Jane Austen.
Yeah, you know, so I was reading Austens and Brontes and what are considered to be classics now, and at the same time I was reading The Secret Garden.
You should use this opportunity to read what trash, Neve.
Well, but then, you know, isn't it about reading what you enjoy?
Yes.
But there's been, I feel like I've been quite restricted in my option, you know, just in terms of my reading, and I've forgotten about reading, not to discuss a book.
Yes.
About reading. Yes. Like, I'll probably do a little review for all of the books that
like
I read.
To do more of that,
but it would be nice to just sort of go, that character was a bit sexist. I don't care. I like that character.
And
not book. Yeah, you know, and not have to have a bit of a, right, how can I justify liking this? Or what did I think of that subplot?
Reading
to just allow
for
to
you again.
Yeah, wash over me. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm already a book down, which is awesome. Because
what have you started with?
Well, the first one I did was the second category, which was a book you can finish in a day.
Mm.
I think I love the way that's phrased. It's a book you can finish in a day. You probably shouldn't read it in a day. It's one of those books that I've so enjoyed and I'm going to dip in and out of it. It's Catching the Big Fish by David Lynch.
Yes.
So David Lynch is a very famous film director. He's also a musician, a writer. You know, Twin Peaks is coming back, so I think he's been in the news an awful lot.
Massive Twin Peaks.
But as part of my, you know, New Year thing, I've been getting into meditation a little bit. I was introduced by a friend of mine, and he was very into transcendental meditation, which David Lynch wants to make available in schools across America, because he thinks that if kids grow up with meditation as part of their daily cycle, they'll grow up as stronger, better people in the world. And I've certainly found that I do find it calming, and that's not a word I tend to use about myself very often. So when I found out that he'd actually written a book going into it's called Catching the Big Fish. It's all about meditation, but it's not really about meditation. It's about the idea of ideas. What is an idea? And he sees our consciousness as a sea.
Yeah.
And if you go shallowly into your consciousness, you will grasp little fish and you'll get little ideas. But the more that you delve into your own subconscious, the more that you look for them, the bigger the fish, the bigger the idea.
Yes, that makes
sense. And as a filmmaker, as an author, that's how he gets his ideas. And he says that little fish, they can start off little and become large, you know, and so on. But it's, I've so enjoyed it. The chapters are short, to the point of being like a paragraph in a lot of cases. But it's one you can read in a day. But you'll go back. I think I'll go back to it. He's not telling me anything new, but the way he's telling me it is making me think about it differently. So I'm really enjoyed it.
Is it the sort of book that you could keep in your bathroom?
Yeah, I think it's either going to be one of those books that you thumb through a million times across a year and don't even think about, or it's one of those books that you put on a shelf and it gets dusty.
Yeah.
I've yet to decide. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds nice. It sounds like it's working for you as well.
Well, yeah, and it did tie in with, you know, with what I'm doing. It's reminded me of a few old interests. Like I'm a Reiki practitioner, but I haven't actually done anything like
that. Oh, I love Reiki.
For
that was lovely.
Years.
That's how we kind of became friends, actually. You were doing Reiki on me.
Yeah, you know, and it's something that was incredibly important to me. And it never became less important. I just got busier at other stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the way everything happens, isn't it?
So for me, if like reading this book, if all that it's done is made me go, hey, I like that, I want to do that again. For me then, like, good book.
Yes.
Pat it on
Excellent.
The head. And,
well
and,
done.
Yeah. What about you? You've said you're also booked
on. I've done... Well, let me... I'm just turning the computer so I can see. I've done a book you've been meaning to read, which is the third category. We're not doing them in order by month or anything like that, because the first one is a book published this year. And don't read books that are published in January. September is Oscar season for books, you know, so we'll wait till the end for that one. But yeah, so I've done a book you've been meaning to read, the third one. And I've done Alias Grace by Margaret Atwood.
Yay!
Which made me very happy. We went to see Margaret Atwood speak at the Ilkley Literature Festival
last year,
and she was extraordinary. And she's
we have been
so,
such a fan of hers.
She's so clever and articulate and witty and funny and kind, and like her eyes just sparkle. She's a wonderful woman. Canadian writer, very, very famous for writing fiction.
Speculative fiction.
Poetry,
well, all sorts of fiction.
Journalism. Some of her fiction is more speculative, some essays. Some of her fiction is fantasy. This is historical fiction. It's based in Canada, around, I believe, Toronto, in the middle of the 19th century. And it's the story of a woman called Grace who comes to Canada as an immigrant from Ireland, and is accused and found guilty of the murder, or the attempted murder, of two people alongside another man who is also an Irish immigrant, and he is hung and she is jailed for life. And the book starts off with her in jail. She's halfway through a sentence. She meets this doctor who half the story is told from his opinion, half the story from hers. And this doctor is interested in madness because Grace has also been previously in a lunatic asylum. And he is interested in the way the mind works, and he's got all these fanciful ideas. And you've got to remember that it's set, you know, 80 years before Freud. So when psychology and the way the mind works was in a very, very infant state, the science behind that. And I think she conveys that so well. Because he says things and he thinks things that, you know, in your head now with hindsight are probably nonsensical. And I don't know much about psychology, but I feel that I knew enough to appreciate just how much this science was in its infancy when she tries to
about it. How far we've come as well in the way definitely. That we regard... Well, anyway.
Grace as a character is just wonderful. You love her. I mean, she's a very unreliable narrator. You have no idea if she's telling the truth or not throughout it. Again, Atwood does this so well, this idea of just sustaining. I watched The Hateful Eight whilst I was reading the book, not like during the reading. You can't watch Tarantino and read Atwood. If you can do that successfully, you're some sort of like,
please get
genius.
In touch with us. We have many, many experiments we'd like to run on you.
Imagine doing that, bloody hell. But I watched The Hateful Eight and loved it. And I found the way that Tarantino directs his film, I found that within Atwood's writing. This suspense that she draws out, and she creates this world in which there is no trust, and there is... but you as a reader are still loving the characters, even though you don't trust them, you don't know what the hell's going on. It's beautiful. It's a book that I wish I'd read before, but I'm very glad I read now. And it's also made me really just want to reread everything she's ever read.
Up until I read the Penelopiad, which was the first of her Canongate series, more of a novella than a novel, Alias Grace was by far my favourite Margaret Atwood, just because I thought the nuance that you've described, but also they don't go terribly into all of the characters' backstories and motivations and stuff, but there's enough hints to them that everybody feels like really rounded characters.
Very much so.
And you feel challenged by the unreliable narration rather than frustrated by it. You know,
it's enjoyable to read.
You feel like you're figuring it out, and the trick is to try and figure it out before she actually tells you, because she might not tell you. And that's one of the things that I just adore about Margaret. She has a gift for clarity, but it's still remaining a beautiful expression, you know. And I think that's I think she's just phenomenal, and I've been dying for you to read that book for years.
It was definitely a good one to start with. I think it really did wake my brain up a lot reading it. Made me think, and that's never a bad thing. But I'm also now on my second book. So shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one I'm reading at the moment, I'm skipping ahead because it's still January, but I thought I'd get on with it, is the one that was banned at some point, which is category number 8. and the reason I'm doing this is because originally I was going to do the book that you should have read in school, and I was going to do, Maya Angelou's
I Know What the Caged Bird Sings,
because I read a section of that in school, but then... we didn't do the whole book.
Yeah.
And I, you know when you think that you've read a book?
Yeah.
And you're convinced you've read a book. And you've recommended this book to several people.
And then suddenly gone, wait, who?
Wait, I haven't read that book at all. Because, yes. So I thought, right, I'll read that. I'll do that one for this one. And then I went down to my library to get it off the shelf, because I work in a university library, so I've got access to quite a lot of books. So I went downstairs to get it. And further on the shelf was Toni Morrison. And I thought, you know what, I haven't read one of her books in years, and I was just going to read it as a book. But then I've got a book called 100 Banned Books, and I'm going to recommend that people buy this actually as a book itself. It's by Nicholas Karolides, Karolides, and some other people. And it's 100 Banned Books, Censorship Histories of World Literature, and it's brilliant. It introduces books from a variety of genres and a variety of times that have been banned for various reasons. It explains the reasons they've been banned. Some of them have been banned in schools, in whole countries, just in states, whatever. Mostly in America, but they do include some things across the world. And it's brilliant. And I'm one of these is Toni Morrison's Bluest Eye. So at the moment, I'm reading that and I'm 50 pages in, so you can't tell me anything about it. But it's her first book.
I've read that one.
From 1970. And so far, I'm finding it quite depressing, but very, very good.
No, you shock me.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing at the moment. What are you going
to
do next?
Well, the next one is a book recommended to me by a local librarian, a bookseller. Which might be the person
that
I'm
might
sat
be
opposite.
Me. That might be me. Would you like me to recommend you a book?
Well, I think I've actually blogged about this before in relation to the Book of Human Skin. Jess has like a gift when it comes to recommending me books.
Yes,
she doesn't tend to do it that often because, well, we have reading lists and we both respect.
Yeah.
You know that adding to it is a.
Also, I'll never get them back.
Cruel, cruel thing.
Neither will she.
We have swaps like every 5 years where we gather up 90 books and relocate them. But yeah, every time you've recommended me a book, in the main, I've absolutely been absorbed by the world. And this looks to be no exception. Mm. It's called Nunslinger by Stark Holborn. And the blurb goes as follows. The year is 1864. Sister Thomas Josephine, an innocent Vicentian nun from St. Louis, Missouri, is making her way west to the promise of a new life in Sacramento, California. When an attack on her wagon train leaves her stranded in Wyoming, Thomas Josephine finds her faith tested and her heart torn between Lieutenant Theodore F. Carthy, man too beautiful to be true, and the mysterious grifter Abraham C. Muir. Okay, first of all, she's a nun. Why is her heart being torn by anybody? Oh my
Just
God.
Read the book.
Falsely accused of murder, she goes on the run, all the while being hunted by a man who has become dangerously obsessed with her. Her journey will take her from the most forbidding mountain peaks to the hottest, most hostile desert on earth, from Nevada to Mexico to Texas, and her faith will be tested in ways she could never imagine. This is a true tale of Sister Thomas Josephine, a woman whose desire to do good in the world leads her on an incredible adventure that pits her faith, her feelings, and her very life against inhospitable elements. The armies of the North and South, and the most dangerous creature of all, man. Well, you know what? I spent 12 years being educated by nuns.
That's why I chose it for you.
None of whom, as far as I'm aware.
It's the best one in the world. This is a book that has come out of a conversation in the pub where somebody said Nunslinger and somebody went, that's a good title for a book. Like, this is amazing.
Assuming this is not actually based on a true story.
No, this is based on the true story the same way the Coen movies are based on true stories.
So totally and utterly factual.
Totally and utterly true. In order for, in respect of the survivors.
The nun the Vatican won't mention.
But everything else has been told exactly as it is. This is brilliant. I love this book. It's hilariously funny. It goes all over the place. You have to, it's the sort of book you have to read at 50 miles an hour because it's just the action is so fast paced. I'm very interested to see what you think of it.
I'm really looking forward to it now, but I'll probably kill you.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. You have to choose one for me though.
This is true. Oh yeah, revenge is a thing of sweetness. I might read it before I choose one for you just because I should put a bit more thought into it than just looking at my shelves right now and going, oh yeah, you're probably like that.
I need to ask a local librarian for mine. I might ask the lady who sits next to me at work. She is probably my most... When I say local librarian, though, should it be somebody in Leeds or somebody at work? Because I have librarians everywhere in my life. They're like, you know...
I feel, and I could be mistaken here, and perhaps modern Mrs. Darcy will get in touch with us to clarify, but I'm pretty sure the important word there is librarian.
Yes.
Like, if you're in a remote Alaskan village somewhere and your library is a van that arrives every 6 months, ask that person. Don't worry that they live too far away.
You know what? You should use your libraries because... Jeez, they really need your help.
Under attack.
If you haven't seen it already, CILIP, the Chartered Institute for Librarians and Information Professionals, have got a thing that you sign and
petition.
The petition, thank you. They've got a petition together to halt the epic closures of local libraries that is robbing our country of any chance of being information literate in the future. Yeah, I said it. But yeah, so if you see it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, just do me a favour and just sign it. Yes, I one of my favourite things about being a librarian is blatantly the opportunity to lend people books, because we're not allowed to say it, but we all got into this job because we love books. Everybody think, goes, oh no, it's because I want to
I've
help
I've got
people,
to break it to you, Jess. I don't think that's the industry-wide secret that maybe you think. I think
you've
most
been to
people
any of our
know that about... I'm not talking about librarians who are a breed apart. I'm talking about people. People know that you're all in it because you love books.
Yeah, we do love them. We get to touch them all the time. It's great.
That
anyway,
so creepy,
what's our next thingy then? Our next.
Well, I've been thinking about that. One of the categories, I think it's category 11, is a book that intimidates you.
Mm.
And I'm shit at stuff like this because I'm an incredibly eclectic reader.
Yeah,
so I tend to think I could probably read that.
Yeah.
So I tend not to have stuff where I'm like, ooh, gosh, no, that puts me off. But then I've just spotted... I've just spotted a book on one of my shelves.
I'm sorry, Niamh's got the book in her hand and I've seen it and I'm thinking that's...
A good possible choice for this.
That's a good possible choice for this, yes.
So it's Fiona Shaw.
Yes.
And this one's called A Stone's Throw, and I've picked it up, and it fits quite a few of the categories, actually. It's been sat on my shelf for months. It's a book that I've intended reading. Mm-hmm. But I've
seen her speak. She's wonderful.
As much as I'm not, as much as I work very hard at not being a book snob, I think I possibly am a little intimidated. But in the same way that I've embraced Margaret Atwood for being a more intelligent author than I am intelligent reader, I should embrace Fiona Shaw for the same reason. But I do feel like she writes smarter than me.
Have you read anything else by her?
No. I think she's genuinely one of these ones I'm intimidated by.
Just read the book.
The other books that she's read is The Sweetest Thing, The Picture She Took, and Tell It to the Bees.
Tell It to the Bees, that's the one I've read. I've read The Stone's Throw as well. I think I got that one to review, and then I got a Tell It to the Bees because I saw her at Morley Literature Festival.
That was it. But I didn't get this one from you because the spine's not broken or anything.
What are you saying?
Well, you've read it.
Yeah.
So obviously I picked this one up independently. The blurb on the back is, what if following your heart takes you somewhere you cannot bear to go? You must choose how to live your life, and as you are my son, William, I tell you that you and you alone must do the choosing. Like everyone, Meg has made choices over the course of her life, most of which she's proud of, but that doesn't mean she's without regrets, nor haunted by questions of what might have been. What if her older brother hadn't gone missing when she was just a child? What if she'd married for love, not duty? What if she told her son why it matters that he, unlike her, listens to his heart? Set in England and Africa and opening during World War II, A Stone's Throw is all about family, love, duty. It's about the people we miss and the secrets we keep. Above all, it's about the choices we make and those we don't. And then really irritatingly, it has a lead title section on the back cover, which says, will appeal to readers of The Outcast or Brooklyn. Shaw's fans include Emma Donoghue and Jackie Kay. Perfect for reading groups. Mm. I feel like I should tell Serpent's Tale that I don't really care about any of that. I have read both The Outcast and Brooklyn, and I enjoyed one of them and didn't enjoy the other, so you've alienated me with your two choices there. Emma Donoghue, that's The Room.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Kay?
Oh, I know the name, but not the face.
Well, two people I don't know like this book. That's awesome. I kind of imagine more than
I find the way people try and get book bloggers to read their books, sometimes I love it,
odd.
And sometimes I find it hilarious. My favourite one I've ever got was the one that included... a little tiny red Chinese fan.
For fanning yourself while reading?
No, it wasn't red, it was yellow, and it was for Life of Banana by P.P.
Somebody or other.
Something or other. Oh gosh, I'm so bad at this.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
See, I like it. Fried Green Tomatoes has all of Sipsy's recipes on the end, and I think that's brilliant. I've cooked most of them, and I do not cook. Ever. That's purely for love of the book. But I actually think you blogged about this a few years ago, where it was like, if you've enjoyed this, you know, like, you know, those lists are here's completely
you also
irrelevant.
Love this.
You know, and I remember
I
you were kind of
well,
like,
I hate stickers on books because it's just more stuff for me to peel off.
Well, I hate stickers on books because I go through an existential crisis every time of going, will this be the sticker that tears the cover?
Yes, yes.
I hate
it's
that.
It's the one where you're not sure if it's a sticker or if it's actually a bit of the cover. So you tear it and then you tear the cover and then that's your book.
Or you pick at it and half of it comes off and half of it leaves like that gummy white trail.
Even though it is a book and it's there to be enjoyed.
You are ruining my enjoyment of this.
The book I have chosen, I think you'll enjoy that. I'd again be interested to see what you thought of it.
Everyone I know loves her, which is probably another reason I've been a bit
intimidated. I found her books very not as easy to read as you think they would, given the size of them.
Well, the blurb sounds very. I'm expecting it to be a lot more, philosophical and
yes,
psychological, because that's what I've heard about it.
If you've ever read Sally Vickers, another one you haven't read. But if anybody on the tape has read Sally Vickers and enjoyed, I think they will enjoy this one. Right, the one I've gone that I am intimidated by, I'm going to probably... I haven't completely decided yet because it does intimidate me.
You're going for a tome.
It does intimidate me more than words. Is War and Peace, because it's War and Peace. And you've read War and Peace. And our other original member of LBC has also read War and Peace. And I'm sure she wouldn't mind us saying, because she's not going to hear this, in the bath.
Yeah.
Which I think is a brilliant idea.
8 months?
Imagine a year's worth of baths. And you read War and Peace in all of them from beginning to end. That's a good lot of reading. I was very proud of her for that, to be honest. I thought it was a good idea.
I was really... This is...
No, but it is. It's
you
War
know,
and Peace.
You know when you're about to say something.
I mean, you know when you see a blockbuster book and it's 1,000 pages and you think, oh, gosh.
I actually think it's
this is about
commitment.
3 inches thick.
But this is a tremendous commitment of bath time, too. You know, I'm like, there's a lot going on there.
And she didn't even break it up with a really quick, go sideways move into Pride and Prejudice. You have to do, because you have to read Pride and Prejudice in the bath at least once a year.
You just have to read Pride and Prejudice at least once a year. The location of it is irrelevant, I think, there.
But no, I'm reading War and Peace because I have watched the first two episodes of the BBC drama, as a lot of people have. And I'm enjoying it immensely, and I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't even know if it's a good adaptation because I've not read the book. And I want to be one of those people who can recognise a good adaptation of something because they've read the book, because I can do that with most of their adaptations. All the Austens and the Brontes, I can say, well, that's a good Jane Eyre, or that's a good Persuasion, or whatever, because I know the book.
2004, Charlotte, Gainsbury, and Toby Stevens.
Yes, very much agree with you that. And also, the Persuasion one is the one with Kieran Hines. As went with, and that's brilliant. Very, very. I watched that over Christmas actually when I was horribly sick, and it got me through. So I was pleased with that.
And I mean, the North and South, Elizabeth Gaskell. Yes. Oh, sorry. I'm. You know what? I'm just gonna say it. You are somebody who can tell if it's a good adaptation. You just need to have read the book, and you happen to have not read this book. But it's also it's one of the great epics for a reason, and it's very
thick. It's
3 inches
thick. It's one of those books where I'm very tempted to have it on Kindle, but then I'll have to read it on the way into work.
Can I say the thing I'm not supposed to say?
Yeah.
For me, though, I found it very like Gone with the Wind.
Oh, I love Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I mean...
Gone with the Wind, by the way, is the best book to read over Christmas ever.
Well, it's certainly going to be better than A Brief History of Seven Killings, which is not brief, not historical, and features far more than seven killings. Sorry, it's a great book and everybody probably should read it. It's a really worthy read, but I have to admit, I struggled.
Bit of a toe.
But then, you know what? I'm not put off Marlon James as an author at all, because I really struggled during Wolf Hall, but then I flew through Bring Up the Bodies. I was dreading Bring Up the Bodies. I read that because it was like I kind of have to. I absolutely loved it. So I think with Marlon James, he's going to be one of those authors that sometimes it works really well, because I love his writing.
I read a conversation with him and Jeanette Winterson. Am I saying her name properly?
I think you're saying her name.
Yes.
So.
In The Guardian, it was a conversation between the two of them, and I found him a very, very interesting person. And he's also did an excellent show on Radio 6, on Six Music, about...
You're
not
so diverse
about
in your interests.
I really am. Look at me and my diverse interests. Right, book that was published before you were born, because I've kind of chosen... Well, I've not kind of chosen mine. I've chosen the author, but not the book. I want to read another Angela Carter.
Oh, excellent. Yes. I think I've got a few.
Well,
hi at Lainey Bop. You will get that copy of Angela Carter back after Jess has read it.
I have got quite a lot of them. Another good thing about working in libraries that they never tell you is weeding. It's called collection development, and it's when you develop your collection by going, nah, hammer.
It's weird, because in other work situations, that's like called theft.
It's not theft. Imagine taking...
Weeding, it's a thing.
It's weeding, it's a thing. So, yeah.
It's like when you're cooking and there's a difference between testing and sampling. You test and go, oh, yeah, that's really good. And if you have another spoon, you're officially sampling.
I have to be in current in my in reading. Mm. So I've read Night at the Circus, and I've read her book of fairy tales.
Mm.
And I've read Magic Toy Shop. So which one, I don't know. I would like somebody to recommend me, please, another Angela Carter. It must have been published before 1985. And it must be good.
Yeah.
So, and not too weird.
Well, I'm sorted for this category because with LBC Three Reads, we only meet every 3 months, and we tend to read a lot of like the great American fiction. Mm. By pure coincidence, we've alternated, so all our authors happen to be completely equal in terms of being male or female.
Mm.
We will go with an interest, so we've read Gunter Grass, who's a German author. We're not absolutely tied to our categories, but our next read for that is All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh yes, my uncle's favorite book.
Well, we're reading that partly because this is one of the centenary years. We've got four centenary years for the Great War. This is one of them. We wanted to be mindful of, you know, the sacrifices that were made, I suppose, by generations gone by.
I've never read it myself. I probably will.
Which sounds really like, that sounds really plummy, or a really odd reason to do something. But I think it's just a little homage, a little tribute that we can pay. So that's going to be my one that was published before I was born. It bloody well better have been.
Yes.
I haven't actually checked.
Yes, it was.
Because
yes,
I was looking at this and I was like, yes, this is a category I don't feel terribly comfortable with on the day Buffy turns 35. You know?
It's fine.
Oh, Buffy, we've gotten older.
I was convinced that Buffy was way older than that.
Oh, shut up.
But you know how when you're younger, like, a year is a long time?
Mm.
Like, Buffy came on TV when I was in my early teens. And she was... Yeah. I'd have been 12, so she was a lot older than me because she was in secondary school and she was in college and la la la. But yeah, Giles as a librarian, he gets points for that. Book you had to read in school or should have read in school. I've already mentioned mine.
Are you? Is this something that like a set book, or
well,
is this just a book
this
that like you should have read at that age?
Yeah, well, but... I was thinking of this as an interpretation because the actual phrase is a book you should have read in school. So I don't know if this is a book that you should have read in school because you were studying it for an exam but you didn't, in which case...
Like, well, it was probably one of the four options.
But
and you
that doesn't apply for me because I read all the books.
Yeah, so did I.
I was originally thinking of doing Of Mice and Men, even though I have read it before. But because the other half of the year to me did it for their GCSE book, my half of the year did Lord of the Flies, which was excellent. Oh no, I loved it. Terrifying, but loved it. So I was going to do that, but then I thought a book I should have read in school.
Well, a book that I should have read in school, like when I think about that category, like I feel like everybody between the ages of like 14 and 16 should read Flowers in the Attic. Because we passed that book around like it was porn.
I had the best conversation with my old dinner lady about Flowers in the Attic because I had it and she saw me reading it at lunchtime and was just like, me and my brother used to read that under the quilts at night and be like looking at each other going
for anybody who's not aware, Flowers in the Attic is a book by Virginia Andrews. It's about four siblings whose mother hides them in an attic in order to gain her inheritance.
It's horrible.
It heavily features incest as like the sole positive aspect of being incarcerated by one of your parents.
Sadly, it probably would be the sole positive aspect.
But it's just... It was horrible. So immersive. I mean, as I say, we passed this.
Mm.
And I remember mentioning it to one of my aunts. And she was like, we did the same thing. And you'd read it and like, you'd read whatever chapter and you'd come into school the next day. And whoever you lent it off, you'd be like, oh my God,
almost
I just hit
like,
this point.
Like my school, that would be Judy Blume.
Yeah. Like, are you there, oh, God? It's me, Margaret.
Because we I think when so I was about 11, and that was,
I'm
and
thinking
kind of
more,
the cave bear
what books
as well.
Did I miss that were like, because we've got this book club, LBC Puffins, which is all about adults reading children's books.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, like, I think the first book was Matilda by Roald Dahl, because it was just a book I'm like, everybody should read this book, whatever age you are, but it is a children's book, ostensibly. And what's has amazed me is that we all have different essential reads from our youth. There are so many people that never overlapped in their reading choices. So for some people, practically every book bar the one that they've put in a year is a new read for them. Whereas for others, every book that has been pulled out in a year is a book that they read as a child. So it just totally depends. So I'm trying to think of what ones did I miss? But this wouldn't have been out when I was a kid.
It would have been. Check the deck. I've just passed Niamh another book that I was going to lend her. She's now looking at the Verso to see what the original year of publication.
First published 1966? Yeah, right. I was not in school in the 1960s.
No, but Nina Borden, I read that when I was at school.
Nina Borden, I know I've read one.
I loved her books. It wasn't the sort of book that I passed around, but it's the sort of book that it was on the library shelves. I remember Carrie's War, the book, the first book I read of hers, being on the library shelves, and every girl at some point in the year borrowed it. It wasn't a book that was discussed. It wasn't like Judy Blume. It wasn't like Jean Owls. It wasn't like the Maeve Binchys. But
they were read and they were sustained.
It was almost like the Shelley school books.
Yeah. Oh God, I love the Shelley. Well, I was looking at them and I was thinking, actually, the only essential read I have from that period of time is probably Anne Frank's Diary.
That's a beautiful book.
It's just amazing.
It's a very, very sad and tragic life. And it's a beautiful book. And it's the worst thing about that book, I think, for me, is how talented a writer she would have grown up to be.
Well, I mean, I know this sounds really stupid, but you know when you're like, that was her first thing.
Yeah, you know, like, that bitch.
Damn,
she was 13.
Jeez, you know.
It's just.
And I have three versions of it because I received in 1992, when I was 10 years old, I got Anne Frank's Diary for Christmas. And it was the first version that was approved by her father. Then it might have already been out, but that was the version I started with. And it's got my little torn cover and my sloppy handwriting with the name in it. And I'll treasure that copy forever. But I also have the two subsequent versions, which increase the content. Because Anne wrote about being a teenage girl. And some of it was sexual and some of it her father was uncomfortable with. And some of it just wasn't socially appropriate for the time. So they've added to it hugely. So if anybody else is doing this challenge and you've not read it, that's a really good pick for that one. But yeah, I've got The Witch's Daughter here, which is appropriate for that time. It looks like a book I would have read in school
you
had I come across it. It's about witches and orphans.
You would have loved that book when you were 10.
And yeah, tinged with sadness.
Nina Borden's amazing.
Oh, Carrie's War. That's what I've read of hers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
amazing.
The Peppermint Pig, which I think was one of the Puffins books. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorted for that one as well.
Excellent. If I was going to recommend one book for this challenge, though, to anybody who hasn't read it, I would recommend Anastasia Krupnik by Lois Lowry.
Is that Life According to...
No. This is about a teenage girl in America who lives with a poet for a dad and an artist for a mum, and wears big round glasses.
Yes,
and
it
has
is.
Frizzy hair.
This has turned into a TV series with Kelly
I've
Martin.
I've never seen the TV series. I never want to see the TV series.
I grew up watching that show.
Anastasia Krupnik, I wanted to be her when I was a kid. I wanted to be her mum now. I read the first book again and I thought, if I'm ever a mother, that's the mother I want to be.
I don't think I ever actually got over wanting to be Harriet the Spy.
But yes, if I was going to recommend one book, that's what I do. Mine's going to be, and for that one, as I've already mentioned, it's going to be Maya Angelou's I Know How the Cage Bird Sings. What else have we got? A book
that you've already read at least once.
Well, a book you can finish in a day was the one that you said you'd already done. For me, and this is going to sound really wanky, I'm going to really, really strongly suggest people read the Quick Read series, because it's a series that is done by the Reading Agency. It's a series of very short books that are written for people who maybe have an English reading level that is probably in common parlance about the same as a 10-year-old. But they're adult stories. They have Anne Cleves has got one, there's an Agatha Christie adaptation, and one I want to do, I was thinking of doing, which is I Am Malala, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, and I apologise if I'm not, which is the story of the young girl who was shot and by the Taliban and now is in Birmingham campaigns.
Because I've got that, but I haven't read it yet. And you know, it looks like a substantial book, but it also looks like one that's ripe to be turned into a quick read, to make it accessible.
Well, I was very, very, very happy when I saw that, because when I worked at the college library, me and my boss were going to buy that when it came out in hardback, and then it spent a long time not coming out to paperback, and this really is a bugbear of mine when books that people should be wanting to read and want to read
are not available
in paperback, because libraries get hit by that.
But
so
I just
much.
And I also just think that's not, I mean, the only people who benefit from it happening that way, I feel, are the publishers.
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure that authors want to build on the momentum of a book being released and gaining a buzz and not go, and now we'll wait a year and do all of this again. And readers, like, I, aside from the costs, there's space issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a lot of reasons why I think having Kindle versions is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Having sample chapters available as ebooks and stuff are a great idea. But paper, I mean, I'm not saying there's no need for a hardback. I'm just saying why they can't be released simultaneously.
I might be reading that one for my book.
Oh, I was, because one of the ones I was half thinking of recommending to you, because I can't remember if you've said you've read it or not, was the one that you should have read at school, and that was Daddy Longlegs.
Never read it. No.
I love it. It's so sweet, and it's so of a time, and it's probably one that you would read in a day.
That's a good idea.
And it's about a, I think it's probably the 1890s or something like that. But it's early 20th century, if it's the 20th century at all. But it's about a girl who comes from a children's home, and basically she writes a funny essay which gets held up in her local school. And on the basis of that, she's too old to be adopted at 14 or 15, I think, although the younger kids still have a chance. So one of the trustees agrees to send her to school, and his only condition is that she writes a letter to him every week to demonstrate that the education is going to good use.
Mm-hmm.
But possibly because of the privations she's experienced growing up, she's a tremendous sense of humour, and the only thing she knows about this trustee, other than his name, is the fact that when he was walking out the door, he threw up a shadow like a giant Daddy Longlegs. So she immediately starts writing these letters to Dear Daddy Longlegs.
That's really cute.
It is of its time. I imagine...
When was it published?
Oh, God. We're talking a while back now. Jean Webster. I think I have it downstairs if you're interested. But and I think it's one of those ones that, like Labyrinth, if you look at it with a particular eye, you can find problematic aspects. But if you just read it to read a book of that time, it's beautiful. It's short. It's cute. That's the one. Jean Webster?
Michelle de Villiers?
No, different. And I think it's probably on Project Gutenberg. I think it's probably of that age. So it must be at least 75 years old.
Nope, can't find it.
Hang on. I'll find it here now.
My Goodreads. Well, what's the next chapter whilst you're finding that? What's the next in the category? Sorry.
Oh, sorry, apologies. A book that was previously abandoned?
Oh, so many. So many. Last year was a bad year for me abandoning books. I abandoned The Goldfinch. I abandoned We Need New Names.
1912, sorry.
I abandoned...
Is that We Need New Names by...
No, Violet.
Buluel.
Yes.
That's a really good book.
I read the first half, and I read it on my Kindle.
Sorry, no judgments.
I didn't abandon it. I properly abandoned The Goldfinch. I find that so hard to read. But I didn't abandon We Need No Names. I read half of it when I was away one weekend at a friend's wedding, and my Kindle, and I got home and I had a hardback book that I was reading anyway, and it was one of those where I'd only taken my Kindle because I was going away, so when I got home I carried on reading the book I was originally reading, and I kind of just lost its way a bit, and then I kind of wasn't bothered, so
yeah, it's tricky. But
I can't do The Goldfinch. I can't. I'm on 35% and I just
himself has Moby Dick is his Moby Dick. He gets to like 300 and something, and it's like, I'm done with this book.
What else have I done? I'm just looking at your shelves, because we're in Neve's book room, so I'm just looking at her shelves at the moment.
Sorry, we're in one of my
many book rooms.
That's not like a braggy statement. That means that I go without food and clothes.
You see, I did Anna Karenina. I abandoned that, but I can't do that and...
No, Warren. There's a pick your poison here.
That really is.
You have. I mean,
maybe The Shadow of the Wind.
Did you not finish that?
Oh, I hated that.
I loved that.
I know. I have no soul.
No.
I will find one. I have many books that I've abandoned over the course of the last few years. I will find one and I will think on it.
You know when like you had a bad experience with a book?
Mm.
There are two books that I have had really bad experiences with. The first was Lord of the Flies, because we had a bold and experimental English teacher when I was quite young. Mm. She was awesome and I adore her to this day. But she thought we could handle a couple of chapters of Lord of the Flies. And she did not read them ahead of time because she was busy.
Yeah.
It was the chapter where Piggy gets stoned.
Oh God.
Fucking hell. Jeez.
Oh, swear, sorry.
Sorry. I didn't bawl in class, but I bawled about it.
Yeah.
So then enough people, like, had a bad reaction to it that she got the American movie because she was like, right, if people see the story in its entirety, it won't be such a big deal. And we watched that and we were like, actually, that's not too bad. And somebody was like, is there another version more true to the book? And she was like, there's the original one from the 1960s. Mm. I still, like, if I'm really run down or ill or sleep deprived, I will have nightmares about that book.
I love Lord of the Flies.
The other one that I had a bad reaction to was We Need to Talk About Kevin. And as we're like looking at my shelves, you know, God. You're like, that's the only cover I can see.
You come to the point where you can watch, can read We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, I read it. I just
didn't. No, it's got to be a book that you've abandoned.
Didn't rate. But yeah, but that's like the only book that my eye is drawn to. I tend not to abandon books.
Yeah, you're very good. I have found one. I'm just gone on my Goodreads library and I found the one I've abandoned that I might. Thomas Cromwell, The Untold Story of Henry VIII's Most Faithful Servant. A biography. Just to put a biography in the mix.
Because, I think that's a noble choice.
Yeah, it's by Tracy Borman. I saw her speak at Ilka Literature Festival is good. It really is. I've seen some excellent speakers there. It's very expensive, but it's good. Tracy Borman's written quite a few.
That's not true. I have abandoned a few prepper books.
But this one
I don't think I can
is the story of Thomas Cromwell. It was written just after Wolfhall and Bring Up the Body, so it's obviously riding on their coattails slightly.
Mm.
I abandoned it because it includes a lot of primary sources and letters, which I normally love, but they're not translated from the original English. And it's translating.
I have a book that I didn't abandon as much as I didn't finish it.
Mm.
Shantaram.
Never heard of it.
Shan something or other. My mother had it on her shelf and I started reading it and it was really, really good, but then I flew back to the UK and I wasn't going to bring a book the size of a small house with me. But that's probably the one that I'm going to dig out for this.
Excellent. Another book I've abandoned that I've just seen on your shelf is Parade's End. By Ford, Madox Ford. I loved the TV adaptation. With Benedict Cumberbatch. I thought he was excellent. I thought everyone in it was excellent. I was really excited to read the book and I got about 120 pages in. I mean, the one me and you have got is the one with all three, I think it's three books in it, in the same one, and I got about 100 pages in and was just, I know, my brain was coming out through my eyeballs. Mm. I had no moisture left in my body because I was just sweating so much with the effort of reading it.
I never managed to finish a Terry Pratchett either. But that's
really?
I love the world that he creates. I can watch the TV series, that's not a problem. But his writing style just can't.
I love Terry Pratchett. Yeah. I love him. I miss him.
Well, that's it. So we have a few options there for that.
We have a few. What's next?
So a book published this year, we're going to wait. A book that you've been meaning to read, well, most of this discussion has been around that. But we should have read it. Book chosen by spouse, partner, sibling, child, is, I guess we'll have to get t'others involved.
My other half is wanting me to do a Chuck Palahniuk. I've read a fair few of his. So we're going to try and figure out one that I've not read.
Well, himself doesn't tend to make very many book recommendations to me. And it's kind of irritating that I've just seen this because we read Wool at Book Club last year, Hugh Howey. Mm. And that was my his recommendation to me. And now I'm like, oh, I really enjoyed that. So I'm looking forward to that one. He'll come up with
something
good.
Very tempted to ask my sibling if she would recommend me a book. I'm guessing it'll be like the biography of some drummer from the 90s, but...
That's a good one. My brother, he's like myself, a devourer of fiction, and
yes,
he has a tiny person at the moment.
Your brother recommended me Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He gave me the first copy of Game of Thrones, your brother.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I mean, I'd been recommending it to you for the last 6 months. You've no interest in it. Anyhow, a book that was banned at some point, I might have to borrow your book.
You shall.
You
should read the book anyway, because it's good.
Yeah, but I'm not, I mean, purely for the, oops, That would be my battery getting low on the, but we're almost finished. So yeah, I think I'll need to read the like have a flick through anyway your banned books just to get some inspiration, because you know, books that were banned like years and years ago, I'm like, I didn't know it was banned, but I've already read it.
Anastasia Krupnik was banned. So many of them.
Sorry, which one was that?
Anastasia Krupnik, the children's
book. Oh, really?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, it's they're banned in random libraries for sexual content or swearing or whatever. There's so many. You wouldn't, more than you'd think. I mean, there's the classics like Lady Chatterley's Lover and Chocolate Orange and all that other stuff, but some of them most random things. Judy Blume.
My mind.
Harry Potter.
Boggle.
Harry Potter's been banned.
Yes, that's
for promoting
that is
the
true.
Evils of paganism, which it does so successfully because I can do magic now.
That's
through my reading my instruction book of Harry Potter. The last one I think was a book that
I also like the subside of that, which is that it's perfectly fine to promote other belief systems.
Of course it is.
But paganism, that would strange
and wrong. And I think there was one which is a book you own which you've been meaning to read. For me, that's most of my library and probably the most of the other books I've read this year. So what I might do is just at the end of the year decide which one of those I like the best.
Yeah. And the reread one, you know, a book that you've already read, I'm feeling the same way about, because I've been half tempted to reread The Man That Fell to Earth, because it was, I think it's by, oh God, no, the name escapes me, but I read it when I was younger because I'm a big David Bowie fan. I was going to read that as like a little, but then there's a part of me that's like, let's see how I go, and something else.
Something
might call out, like I tend to reread a few Agatha Christie's every year, and you know.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to reread. I was going to do Forever Amber because it's been a while, but Forever Amber.
It's been like 3 years.
It's been a whole 3 years. It's a long time, but Forever Amber is also about 1,000 pages
Actually,
long.
When was the last time you read The Clan of the Cave Bear?
Oh, very recently, about
really?
2 years ago. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I read the first two. It's because I got the second one back of my friend who borrowed it.
Oh,
so
that
it was
right,
like,
yeah.
Because
I read them like 6 years ago when we started. That was my first time.
Love them. Love them.
Well, I feel like we've...
I think we've covered all bases there.
Yeah.
I hope we've inspired you to actually do this challenge.
Or do any challenge. Yeah. If your goal is to read 2 books this year, I hope you get them read. And if your goal is to read 200 books this year, I kind of hate you. But in a non-judgmental, just pure jealousy.
Yes.
Sort of way.
If you have any questions or recommendations yourself, do get in touch.
You can contact us via Twitter. I am at Leeds Book Club.
And I am at Book Elf Leeds.
You can also contact us via the comment section on the blog, or if you see us walking down the street.
Please,
I mean,
don't
jump out at us or anything.
No,
yeah, bathrooms are a no-no just in general.
No.
But if you know us, come and talk to us. Thank you so much for listening. Happy reading for 2016. And hopefully this will be the first of many podcasts.
Yes, hopefully it will.
Particularly in relation to this challenge, but also in relation to books as a whole. Because I quite like you, really.
Yeah,
enjoy
you're
chatting
right.
With you.
Yeah, you're right. You've got a good library, so...
Yeah, that's it. I've got a good library. She has access to several, many brilliant libraries.
Yes, I do.
It's friendship made in pure...
and reading.
Mercantile. Anyhow, thank you for listening. Chat to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You said you couldn't find anyone to love you. I said this morning.